Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Hello, America, and happy Monday. Good to have you here at John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. Today is the first day of testimony in Donald Trump's hush money trial in New York. Alvin Bragg's effort to charge the president with records violations for his company for the way he accounted for some money that was paid to Stormy Daniels. Now, keep in mind, we know from the original documents that Just the News made public a couple of months ago that Michael Cohen told his own lawyers he did this all on his own. Trump wasn't in the know, wasn't in the loop. Nonetheless, the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, is trying to bring the charges against President Trump. And there'll be plenty of testimony today. There'll be lots of provocation. Donald Trump, on a daily basis, using the trial to make his case that there is a dual system of justice in America, that the justice system, particularly under Democrats, is being weaponized to go after political enemies. And on that point, I want to go back to something that occurred last week. It was the January 6th case before the United States Supreme Court, a very important one. I believe it's called Fisher versus the United States. And in that debate, there's a question about whether the law can be applied, an obstruction law can be applied to the January 6th protesters who had no intention, those who didn't even know that there was a proceeding going on. But this is a big, big case. But in the debate, there were some really powerful moments by two of the Supreme Court justices, one of them Neil Gorsuch, the other Samuel Alito. And both of them raised concerns about selective prosecution of protesters and riots. It was very stark. And it is a backdrop for what's going on in New York or what's going to go on in Florida or in Washington, D.C., and all these cases where the president and his defenders, his allies, are being prosecuted criminally. The first exchange occurred with Justice Gorsuch. He asked the Biden administration's chief lawyer, Elizabeth Prelogar, would a heckler at today's audience qualify, or a heckler at the State of the Union address, would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify for 20 years in federal prison, meaning the application of impeding a proceeding for things that are typically acts of protest. She didn't give a very good answer, but he clearly was drawing a clear allusion to Congressman Jamal Bowman of New York, who pulled a fire alarm to try to stop a vote last year in the Congress. It was a heinous moment. I believe he was censured for it. But the point that Gorsuch was making is, hey, Bowman walked away unscathed. These January 6th defendants are being charged with a crime that could carry up to 20 years in prison. Justice Alito continued later on with a similar question. And that is, if you don't have evidence of intent, can you really charge someone? If the people didn't even know that there was a proceeding going on, they just walked into the Capitol. Okay, trespassing, we get disorderly conduct, maybe. But how can you charge them with a crime of obstructing an official proceeding when they didn't intend it, didn't even know it. And you see in these two justices' comments a growing concern that the Supreme Court has. The Supreme Court has it because many Americans have it. They see this prosecution of Donald Trump by Joe Biden as an effort to interfere in the political system, to weaponize the Justice Department system. That's what the polling data shows. And it's why so many people today are so concerned about the conduct of Alvin Bragg and other prosecutors who are pursuing Donald Trump in the midst of the 2024 presidential election. All right, now we got a great show for you today. Somebody who knows President Trump quite well, Rick Grenell, his former ambassador to Germany, the man who helped get NATO allies to pay more of their fair share of the NATO alliance in Europe prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the second invasion to occur on Joe Biden's watch. The first occurred in 2014 when Biden was the architect of foreign policy for President Barack Obama. He was the vice president, but really the chief foreign policy architect. So in both circumstances, aggression occurred on Joe Biden's watch. And we now see in today's world a lot of other places where that we ought to be concerned, but for which there is no response by the Biden administration. Nothing meaningful except to withdraw. We withdrew from Afghanistan, leaving our intelligence sources blind in the war on terror in a country now that many of our intelligence experts say is capable of planning a terror attack. Certainly Al-Qaeda or ISIS-K could eventually plan an attack on Afghan soil that we abandoned against U.S. or Western interests. That's something we spent 20 years fighting to prevent. Rick Grenell is going to talk about that. He's also going to talk about a story we had on the front page this morning. It's very important. It's a country we don't talk about often, but it's a key strategic location in Africa where our U.S. troops, particularly special forces, have been operating, Niger. Russia and China have moved into Niger, and they're squeezing Americans out. American special operators are having trouble getting basic supplies and protection. And now, like so often this administration has done, President Joe Biden is sounding the retreat and pulling our troops out, yielding more ground to our enemies and yielding more ground that could have been used to better protect America from terrorists or other foreign threats. That we're going to ask Rick Grenell about that, as well as a similar situation going on in the Balkans, where for some reason at this moment with Europe aflame, we're trying to get a resolution passed in the United Nations condemning something that happened 29 years ago at a time when tensions are already high in the Balkans, right outside the zone where the Ukraine-Russia war is already raging on. Again, there is a lot of people wondering whether there's any strategy to what the Biden administration's foreign policy is trying to achieve or whether it's all impulsive and academic. And we're going to ask former Ambassador Rick Grenell about that and so much more. Also, the extraordinary growth of the Republican coalition that's going on. Blacks, Hispanics, gays, Latinos, so many people that have long been in the constituency of the Democratic Party reevaluating whether they're in the right party right now. Rick Grenell on the forefront of testing that, particularly when it comes to gay Americans. We're going to talk about that. He had a big event at Mar-a-Lago for the Log Cabin Republicans the other day. So Rick Grenell will kick us off on the first part of the show. In the second part of the show, Frank Gaffney, former Ronald Reagan Defense Department official, the executive chairman of the Center for Security Policy, he has been sounding the alarm, much like Michelle Bachmann and many others that we've brought on this show over the last couple of years, over two agreements that the World Health Organization is trying to get passed by the end of May that would subjugate the United States and its public health decisions to the whims and wishes of the World Health Organization. Now, remember, this is the same WHO, the same World Health Organization, that often gave us bad advice about the COVID-19 pandemic, that often gave us conflicting advice, that had to admit it was wrong about certain things. Do we really want to submit American interests, American liberty, American sovereignty to a global organization in a time of crisis? Because these agreements, which have basically the weight of treaties, even though they don't go through Senate review, they would be binding and they would tie the hands of Americans to make independent decisions. If we disagreed with the WHO, we'd have very little capability to act on our own. Frank is going to get us up to speed on why these are bad ideas and what's being done, including a petition circulating in America right now and so many other things. Frank will bring us up to speed on some of the more important developments. This is a subject we keep talking about. We've talked to Ralph Norman about it. We've talked to Michelle Bachmann about it. It doesn't go away. It is still extraordinarily front and center, and it's in danger of being passed at the end of the month of May, unless some dramatic action is taken. So we're going to bring you up to speed on that. Finally, some breaking news I want to turn to. It is a direct impact from the reporting that Stephen Richards did a couple of weeks ago on the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, killing Arkansas airport executive Brian Malinowski. This guy was the head or the administrator for the Bill and Hillary Clinton National Airport in Little Rock. He's a gun collector. He occasionally sells guns without an NFFL, something that used to be allowed, but that the Biden administration is cracking down on. They raid his home. There are concerns that it was a no-knock entry, and there is no body cams that were on, even though after the Breonna Taylor case, there were supposed to be body cams on for all federal police enforcement activities. Serious, serious concerns about this. We highlighted the concerns in a story a couple of weeks ago. Today, the House Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan, its chairman, sent a letter formally opening an inquiry into this very suspicious death. There's a lot of people saying this was a preventable death, an unnecessary death, a raid that didn't need to be carried out with the force that it was carried out on and appeared to be, as Jim Jordan writes in the letter today, in contravention of some of the policies that the Biden administration imposed at its own Justice Department. In addition, Chairman Jordan raised a lot of concern that the reason Malinowski was raided, ultimately shot to death in the head, was that the ATF has been implementing a new regulation to restrict the right of private lawful sales of firearms. Republicans, conservatives, Second Amendment advocates, very concerned about this change in regulation. But this was going to be one of the test cases of the new regulation. That's the concern that Jim Jordan has. And it ends up in a fatal shooting of a man who was a respected pillar of his community, ran the Bill and Hillary Clinton Airport in Little Rock. A very important letter, very important moment in this investigation. You can read that and the letter at Just the News under the headline, House Judiciary Opens Formal Inquiry into ATF Killing of Arkansas Airport Executive. A very important story about the Second Amendment, about the powers and ability of the United States government to comply with its own rules. We've been on top of this from the beginning. This congressional inquiry, a direct result of our own reporting on this with Bud Cummins, the lawyer for the family, former U.S. attorney in Little Rock. We're going to stay on it, but check that development out. We had it first today at justthenews.com. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break in a few minutes. Former Ambassador Rick Grenell, former Trump ambassador, longtime State Department employee. He knows the world of diplomacy. He's got a lot of provocative things to say about the Balkans, about Niger, about Israel, and also the Biden administration's seeming infatuation with a Palestinian Authority that has repeatedly let its own people and the American people down over the years. We're going to have all that in a second. But first, as we do often at this point in the podcast, I want to shout out one of our great partners. They've been with us for a long, long time, and they've played an instrumental role in my own efforts to become a more healthy individual, Field of Greens, and of course, my good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition. If you're looking to add to your healthy habits because your daily routine is lacking them, like vegetables and fruits and healthy eating, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and it's so simple. I want you to join me on the journey. It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. Sometimes I put it in a shake, particularly the berry flavor one. Sometimes I put it into my white egg omelet in the morning. It has improved my life. My blood sugar has gone down. My cholesterol has gone down. My weight has gone down. My energy has gone up. My ability to sleep with greater vigor and rest gone way up. Well, I want you to enjoy the same benefits I have from my good friends at Field of Greens. That's why they're giving you 15% off your first order plus free rush shipping. So all you got to do to take advantage of that is visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. Visit fieldofgreens.com, use the promo code JustNews. You know how much I appreciate this product and how much I credit it for my own healthy living. The reason it works, it's radically different than almost anything else in the marketplace. Each organic fruit and vegetable that's put into this powder is medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust it to keep me healthy, and I promise you're going to love the product. And if for some reason you don't, Field of Greens and Brickhouse Nutrition will give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Not many people do that today anymore. So get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping by visiting fieldofgreens.com. Use the promo code JustNews. That's the promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. All right, when we come back, Ambassador Rick Grenell right after these messages.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. We say this often, elections have consequences, but no election has had more consequences to foreign policies than that of Joe Biden's. We've seen it from Afghanistan to China's aggression to the disassembling of peace and all of the chaos that now reigns across all of the Middle East and more activists and violent Iran. Our next guest was on the front lines of so much of the successes of the Trump administration's foreign policies, from getting NATO to pay more for NATO members to pay more of their fair share for protecting Europe, to creating a more stable world with peace agreements and clear strategic objectives where the American interest was defined. He's the former ambassador to the great country of Germany, and he's our good friend, Ambassador Rick Grenell. Mr. Ambassador, good to have you back on the show.
John, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
We love having you on. And before I turn to what I think may be one of the darkest stories of the last week that isn't getting covered, I want to just talk a little bit about what happened this week. And obviously, Congress approved foreign aid, war aid for Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan. But there was this odd scene on the floor where Democrats are waving not an American flag, but a Ukraine flag, chanting Ukraine. It just seemed like an awkward thing to occur on the floor of the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, it is an awkward thing. And I think what's important is to just say up front, look, foreign policy is difficult. It's not easy. It's hard to be a diplomat. It's easier to work at the Pentagon and just not have negotiations. Remember, the Pentagon doesn't negotiate. They go in and they're prepared, and we need to have a military that is ready and credible and effective. And when it comes to diplomacy and the State Department, a place that I've worked for 12 years and love very much, our diplomats have a much harder time because negotiation is messy. It's not black and white, it's gray. And you're constantly dealing with win-win, lose-lose, win-lose scenarios. And it's very difficult. But when it comes to Ukraine issues, it's a much more complicated issue than I think most people are willing to admit. Certainly, we have to defeat Putin. He is a madman, and there's no question about that. But the question is how do we also deal with the massive death and destruction? I don't believe like what the Finnish president said, the president of Finland said that this is going to be solved on the battlefield. I don't necessarily think that that is true. And I would really want to see peace agreements, not weak peace agreements, but very tough negotiated agreements that stop the killing and get us back into a better place. I believe actually there's openings. I believe that can happen. But when you just see the debate in Congress about how much more money for war, you're missing the whole piece of the State Department. And I don't think we should shove diplomacy off the stage. It seems like the only conversation that's happening in Washington is how much more money do we give to war? And I thought we learned those lessons in Iraq and Afghanistan, that you also got to have a very strong diplomat. Now, maybe it's because Anthony Blinken is really weak and Joe Biden doesn't believe that Anthony Blinken can come up with a plan or negotiate a good one. But I do want to push our Congress to think, if you're going to add billions more to fund a war, they need to be held responsible to be spending a significant amount of capital, money, time for our diplomats to forge some sort of a solution, a good one, not a weak one.
Yeah. And you see, you know, there's a lot of pressure on Israel to try to make some sort of overtures to Hamas and all those negotiations. But there's been very little engagement, at least publicly, that we can see with Russia and Ukraine trying to get some sort of discussions. Are those things going on behind the scenes and we don't see it? Or has that just been missing from the recipe of how we're dealing with Eastern Europe right now?
I think it's missing. I think, you know, if you go back about 2.5 years ago, maybe two and a half years ago, the Chinese came up with a peace plan. And I'm clear-eyed about China. I'm not a supporter of communist China. I've worked with them at the UN for 8 years. I know how they negotiate. And yet, we have to be honest, their peace plan was decent. It was a good starting point, at least, we should say. And in that Chinese peace plan, you know, the first words when the Chinese put forward a peace plan, the first words from Zelensky was, wow, the Chinese believe in territorial integrity for Ukraine. This is a good starting point. Now, the White House immediately jumped on him and said, you know, don't be complimenting that. We're not going to have that. And they didn't embrace a peace plan. They didn't offer one of their own. Remember too, John, we spent, 45 days hearing from the Biden administration in the lead up to the Ukraine war that the Russians were absolutely coming into Ukraine. And all we heard for 45 days is the Russians are coming, there's a war. The Russians are coming, there's a war. Now, I find it morally repugnant that if you know that there's a war about to happen and you've got 45 days, why don't you rush in with European foreign ministers, the Secretary of State, try to avoid war? Why didn't we do that? We didn't do that. We just prepared for war. I find it to be shocking. America should be at the forefront of trying to find a peace agreement, not trying to figure out which flag to wave on the floor of Congress.
Yeah, such a great point. I want to talk about something that hasn't got a lot of attention. We wrote a big story about it over the weekend. Niger, always been a significant ally or strategic partner in Africa. China and Russia have moved into the continent in such aggressive ways. We haven't countered that influence effectively. Now we've got some troops who feel, special forces troops who feel isolated. They're unable to get supply lines and other things going. And a real danger of losing one of our strategic bases for fighting the war against terror. Another one of those things that just have fallen off the table on the Biden administration's security watch. Bring us up to speed on why Niger is so important and what the Biden administration has done is so problematic.
Well, look, I think Niger is a total disaster for the Biden team. It's one of those problems that has been percolating that they just haven't looked at. And I'm a big critic of Jake Sullivan because he's an academic and he put everything on paper as to what he wanted to do. And he sticks to this academic exercise. And that's why we saw just, you know, several weeks before the October 7th attacks from Hamas, we saw our national security advisor messaging to the world that the Middle East is completely peaceful, like never before. Now, that's a total intelligence failure or a Jake Sullivan failure. Either we missed it or he didn't read the intelligence. But I don't believe that we didn't see chatter and red flags in the lead up to October 7th. Anyone who was looking at that could have seen that this was a problem. But because he's just an academic looking at the situation on paper, he's missing conflicts in the Balkans and in Africa. And Niger is the perfect example. We watched as the French were attacked in their embassy there. They have since vacated the embassy. And the French are the ones who, as you know, have largely been in the lead in many of these African countries. And unlike Mali or Burkina, there's a difference there. I think there's a lot of emotion that Americans have towards Niger. We want to help. But when you don't have U.S. leadership and we begin to ignore the place, then it allows the Russians and the Chinese to come in. And that's what has been building for the last 2 years, and especially the last year. You now have the Russians who are muscling us out in Africa. And I think that this goes back to, once again, having diplomatic muscle and having the ability to play strongly. Now, the Assistant Secretary for Africa is a woman named Molly Fee. And Molly and I worked at the UN for a number of years. I know her well. She's very tough, but she's also extremely difficult to work with. She's someone who staff have a hard time working for her. They don't enjoy it. She's belligerent. And that can't be helpful to the whole situation. I hear constantly that we're having trouble throughout all of Africa because our diplomats are really, they feel attacked, they're demoralized. And so we're not out there trying to solve these problems. What we should have had in Niger is more of attention from the White House, trying to get to the bottom of the problems, trying to work with our allies, making sure that we just didn't let the French lead on everything, but that we were there. That's one of the problems in the Balkans, is we've allowed the EU to take over the leadership. And if there's one thing that I've learned at my 8 years at the UN, is that unfortunately for American taxpayers, that no issue is going to be solved without American leadership. We have to have American leadership. So we constantly have to ask ourselves, you know, what can we do diplomatically? We shouldn't always rush in terms of the military option. But there are a lot of tools in the tool belt, so to speak, of the American government that we can use that don't risk American lives and that don't cost billions of dollars. And we're not using those tools.
Yeah. And you have been brilliantly highlighting the lack of attention, the lack of strategic engagement in the Balkans. It's been a tinderbox for many years. Obviously, a lot of the issues that were around in the 1990s never fully resolved. This is a place where we can't afford to have any hostility right now, especially with Ukraine and Russia already engaged in war. What's going on there, and what has the Biden administration failed to do there?
Well, that's a long list. Suffice to say, let's give you something timely. Today or tomorrow, if it's delayed, but there's a resolution in the UN General Assembly that is going to talk about and define a situation in the Balkans that happened 29 years ago as a genocide. And to keep it high level here for our listeners, look, whether this was a war crime or genocide, you know, the international courts have called it a genocide. It certainly was horrific, and it was a war crime. 8,000 men were killed 29 years ago in Bosnia. And what my concern is why are we having these political fights right now? Why is the United States joining Germany to go to the UN when the Balkans are a tinderbox right now? And yet we're going to go and talk about this, you know, war crime, genocide definition from 29 years ago. That's the focus. That's where our energy is. Now, look, I don't want to be dismissive of this very real war crime and emotions for those involved. I'm sure will never be healed. And I want to be sensitive to that. But I also think that there's a value in not being the one that was in the region at the time who wants to look forward and say, let's find a way to get rid of the political issues that are causing problems. And let's find a way to grow the economies and to help people get jobs so that young people stay in the region. And that was the Trump policy in the Balkans, was to reject the politics of yesterday and to try to say to people, look, we understand the emotions are very real. I will never understand all of those emotions, but there is a value in having people that want to help you look forward. And the decision that many in the Balkans made was, I'd like to have good paying jobs. Let's grow the economy. Let's figure out a way to work together. That is really a Trump legacy. And yet, you know, it's hard because I don't want to be dismissive of the very real emotions from war. And you know, we have to admit that many Americans will never understand. They didn't participate in society in the Balkans. They don't understand the killings that families have had to go through. But I just want to say that there's a great value in having someone who doesn't have the emotions of the past helping you move forward so that the generational hate doesn't continue to exist.
Yeah, it's odd that they're picking this conversation at this moment, right? It could have happened anytime in the last 29 years, but there's so much else going on. It seems like leaning backwards at this moment is counterproductive. But that, again, you mentioned something earlier that I think is the signature of Jake Sullivan and to some degree Tony Blinken, though I think he's a little more strategic. And that is that a lot of these things are academic exercises that are seem to be devoid of a strategic plan, right? That there isn't, hey, now's not the time because we got other strategic crises that we got to deal with right now. They're just checking off boxes, it seems like, and sometimes in a counterproductive way. Is that the right way to be looking at this?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's fine to have an academic exercise where you're trying to plan the future.
Right.
But if you don't have the ability to watch how the world unfolds in real time and respond in real time and not have to just go back to a meeting about what was on the plan and what we missed, the academic exercise can become useless. And look, I'm a Harvard grad. I can go academically with anyone and try to have the intellectual argument about what the future should plan and how we utilize America First doctrine to make the world safer. All of those conversations are appropriate. And yet I think when it's game time, after the planning is done, you got to take the plan and push it aside and watch in real time what's happening and respond with emotion and respond with a very smart criteria of what's best for America. That's what I think should be at the forefront. Now, look, I'll finish by saying this, John. I personally believe that when America puts itself first, the world benefits. And here's why. We are not a conquering nation. We don't take your assets. We help you grow. And when America puts itself first, that means the rule of law is first. That means the respect for human rights is first. It means capitalism is unapologetically first. And there's been no greater system to benefit the poor than capitalism. We need to understand that. It's not socialism. It's not communism. It's capitalism. And so we should be unapologetically pro-capitalism, pro-human rights, pro-rule of law, pro-democracy at the State Department. And all of our offices around the world, which we call embassies, should be pushing that same thing.
Yeah. Defining the American agenda was always at the heart of our foreign policy, but it's been so muddled in the last few years. It's sometimes hard to understand what our objective or our intentions even are right now. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. More with Ambassador Rick Grenell right after these messages.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, folks, more with Ambassador Rick Grinnell. I want to turn to one other part of the world because you're so articulate about it, and I think it's another place. Obviously, we're dealing with a strife in the Middle East. The administration seems intent on propping up the Palestinian Authority one more time, even though they haven't had an election in, 19 years, 15 years, something like that. They have a 22-decade record of just utter corruption. Why is it that the administration can't find a different solution than the Palestinian Authority? Is that the wrong way to go right now?
Look, Abbas was elected to a five-year term in 2005.
Yeah.
And so he's in his 19th year of his five-year term. and this is a problem. I mean, Israel had more elections in 5 years than they've had in 19. And so I really believe that we have to be smart about what's happening in the Middle East. And, you know, look, I know our critics are going to jump and say, well, so you believe that the Palestinians are ready for an election. And I don't think it's about being ready for an election. I think they deserve to have their voices heard. And elections are messy. Democracy is messy. There's no clean way to say that. So I do believe that October 7th completely changed the world. And one, it should have been from the mainstream media, the legacy media, a very clear message that funding Iran doesn't work. The isolating Iran, the Iranian regime, not the Iranian people, but the Iranian regime, isolating them, bankrupting them, putting the sanctions back on is not only safer for the region, but it's safer for the world. And it's going to cripple the Islamic regime's quest towards having nuclear weapons. And so funding Iran the way that Joe Biden has done by getting rid of sanctions, giving them cash and credit options, has produced hundreds of billions of dollars for an Islamic regime that throws gay people off the buildings. It is systematically taking away women's rights on a daily basis. People cannot protest. It is a closed society. It's a radical society. And why Joe Biden funded them is beyond me. But it also signals when you fund them, you're going to get things like October 7th. We are now in chaos in the Middle East, because Joe Biden funded the regime that literally funds all of the terrorists from Lebanon to Syria to Jordan and Iraq, Yemen. These are all funded by the radical regime in Tehran that Joe Biden strategically believed that if he engaged with them, they would somehow come into the fold of the international community. It was a blunder, it was a mistake, and it was a deadly mistake.
It has. It's had enormous personal and security costs all across the world. I want to turn quickly to politics before we let you go, Mr. Ambassador. A very important dynamic going on. A lot of the constituencies that have been at the heart of the Democratic coalition, really going back 30, 40 years ago, Black voters, Hispanic voters, gay and lesbian voters. You just had a big event at Mar-a-Lago. They're all in play. What do Republicans need to do to get beyond just, invites and really engage these communities and bring them into the big tent that is the Republican Party?
Yeah, well, when it comes to gays and lesbians, a group that I know well, I would say that Donald Trump has blown the doors off the establishment and the mentality of the past. He is someone who has embraced gays and lesbians, but embraced them in a way where you also have a responsibility. It's not just about freebies. It's not just about these extra things that you want. It's about treating gays and lesbians as full Americans. Now, look, Log Cabin Republicans, which is the gay Republican group, has 80 plus chapters across the United States. People don't realize how large we are. We have a chapter in most major and even minor cities. And our membership is exploding. And it's exploding not just with gay and lesbian men and women, but with suburban women, straight suburban women who support us. And so, you know, the Republican Party talks a lot about how do we reach suburban women and what's the magic elixir to try to reach them. And I would argue that Log Cabin is one of the ways to reach them. And what we've seen is this incredible support. Donald Trump got about 40% of the gay and lesbian vote, and people won't report that, but it is the truth. And I believe that he is going to get upwards near 50%, because what our message at Log Cabin is, and what Melania Trump, she raised us more than $1 million on Saturday night, get incredible support. But what the message really is that if you are gay or lesbian in America, you're not oppressed. You live in the greatest country in the world to be gay. Your flag, the American flag, is the flag that stands for freedom and liberty, your liberty to be whoever you want. Now, the gay left is going to try to put you in a box. They want, they want the table down the hallway at all of the government agencies. That's a rainbow table. After the policy is designed, you walk it down to the table and they put some glitter on it and try to make it gay. I reject all of that extra stuff. I don't want to have a separate flag. I don't want to have a separate law that says that if I'm walking down the street and you attack me, that it's wrong because I'm gay. No, it's wrong to attack me and to steal from me because I'm an American. And the American flag says that I have all my rights. I don't need an extra thing that says, oh, because you're gay, now it's a crime. Because honestly, John, when you do that, if you message to the gay and lesbian community that somehow you need an extra law to be protected, that moves you away from being a full American with full protections under the red, white, and blue. I don't believe that's a good strategy to tell people you know, we got to put you in a different compartment because you're gay. No, I get full protections because I live in America and I'm an American. I don't need extra.
Yeah, that's such an important argument. It has been lost in the last 4 or 5 years. The utter essence of America is that protection, that equal protection. And it seems as though in the last few years, we've created these classes and it's all seems to be based on division. There's more division in the Democratic Party now than at any time I can remember in my time frame. What is it that's driving gay and lesbian voters to the Republican Party? What part of the platform or the policies or what Donald Trump offers has been so instrumental in growing the coalition so quickly?
Liberty. I think that what the Republican Party stands for is freedom and liberty. Get to be anything you want in America. And you know, I think it's important for me to just say this last point, because I know there's a lot of media attention around trans issues. And so Log Cabin has a position, the gay conservative group has a position that we say under 18, over 18. It's a very simple message, but it's a two-prong message. The first message is if you're under the age of 18, you should not be allowed to have a permanent surgery or take some sort of medication that permanently alters your body. That is unacceptable. You're under the age of 18. We don't let kids under the age of 18 get a face tattoo or any tattoo or drink alcohol. There's a whole bunch of things that you can't do. And the arbitrary number of 18, I think, is not something that I want to fight about. I want to accept it as the number that society has established. If you're under the age of 18, there needs to be protections. I don't believe kids have the wherewithal to make very permanent decisions when you're under the age of 18. We should ban that. We should not allow that to happen. At the same time, and just as important of a message is, if you're over the age of 18, go get a face tattoo. Be trans. I really, honestly, I want people to live their lives. And I want them to be happy. And government shouldn't be deciding unless you're somehow, impacting someone else physically. If you're doing harm to somebody, then obviously your behavior should not be tolerated. But if you're over the age of 18, I think the message should be clear. We celebrate who you are, whatever you want to be. And it's not really my business to approve other people's behavior. There's a whole bunch of things that people do when raising their kids that I don't really like. I don't think it's healthy. I don't let TikTok into my house. I think it's a really bad app with vile motives. But honestly, it's not my job to go to my godkids and my nephews and nieces and delete TikTok from their phone. I have strong beliefs about it. I don't let it in my house, but I say live and let live. And so I don't go around trying to tell people how to live their lives, but I do believe that it's important for us to communicate. We must protect kids under the age of 18.
Yeah, such an important concept and common sense. I think that's what a lot of people are looking for. They're craving common sense, which they just got a good healthy dose of in this great conversation. Mr. Ambassador, it is always an honor to have you on the show. Such wisdom. Folks, if you don't do it, go do me a favor. Go follow Ambassador Grinnell on Twitter. It's one of the most influential and I think one of the smartest Twitter feeds anywhere in the country. Actually, it's on X now, of course, at Richard Grinnell. Real easy to go subscribe to that. He's got some of the best analysis every single day. I check it every morning. Mr. Ambassador, great to have you on the show today.
All the best, my friend, John. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. Frank Gaffney on why the World Health Organization's treaty-like agreements are trying to push through by the end of May will not only harm U.S. sovereignty, it'll affect your liberty and the freedoms that we've enjoyed in this country. We'll have that next right after these messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. As you may have seen recently, there were these massive protests in Japan about something we've been talking about on this show at Just the News a lot over the last couple of years, the World Health Organization and its effort to impose two treaties that would cause all countries, including the United States, to follow or be forced to follow the medical direction of the World Health Organization, an organization that was routinely wrong or conflicted or misguided during the most recent COVID-19 pandemic. Now, my next guest has been on the front lines of trying to fight this idea, rallying American support, rallying global support to sidetrack or stop these two very important World Health Organization initiatives. He is the executive chairman of Secure America and our good friend, Frank Gaffney. Frank, good to have you back on the show.
It's great to be with you, John. Thanks so much for paying attention to this problem. It urgently needs it.
Yeah. And if you were to read the news media, the traditional news media, you'd hardly find a word about this. This is such an important moment. And we're just a few weeks out. Give us an update on where these two treaties stand and what the counteroffensive has been by those who are trying to block it.
Well, let me just, if I may, start by saying the reason that it's not in the mainstream so-called media and really much else in the public eye is by design. I believe the only way that the Biden administration could possibly pull off the surrender of our sovereignty, and by that I mean not just national sovereignty, I mean states' rights, I mean also, as you just indicated, personal medical freedom, for millions of Americans is by keeping it completely secret. And that's basically what they're doing. I think they're following the Nancy Pelosi rule. You'll know what's in it after they approve it. And there are, in fact, two agreements. They don't want you to think of either of them as treaties, because that might require the Senate to do its job, which is to say to advise and consent by a two-thirds majority. And they don't want that, because neither of them is likely to get passed if that's the case. So they want him just talk about them as amendments and, you know, a framework agreement and this and that. But the truth of the matter is, as the Congressional Research Service has made clear, they're both legally binding documents, and they both would be, under international law, considered to be treaties. Therefore, the update for your audience is this. We are set on running through an effort we call the Sovereignty Coalition, an emergency campaign to defend America's sovereignty by, in the first place, elevating, exposing, calling attention to, warning about what's afoot, so that people have an opportunity to understand before suddenly this stuff is imposed upon us. And when I say this stuff, I mean not just, as you indicated, John, the director general, a foreign bureaucrat appointed basically by the Chinese Communist Party, no less, named Tedros Ghebreyesus, who brought us, as you correctly pointed out, some of the horrors of COVID-19. In fact, our friend Dr. Robert Malone, one of the frontline doctors in this fight, has observed that, in his estimation, about a million Americans needlessly died from COVID because we followed Tedros Ghebreyesus's advice, his terrible, malfeasant, incompetent advice. So the idea that what we're looking at now is to have this guy given more power, the power not just to give advice, but to dictate to us what we will do in the case of emergencies. And by the way, it's not just medical emergencies. It's basically anything he calls a public health emergency of international concern, including things like climate change and migration and reproductive rights and transgender agenda items, and not least gun violence. All of these things he wants to get his mitts on. We don't want that to happen. Our emergency campaign is focused on what we call the not now declaration. That is to say, don't even think about trying to approve all of this stuff at the end of May, which is the current plan, without the kind of debate, without the kind of assent of the American people, and most especially without a debate and vote in the United States Senate.
Yeah. And for people who want to join this, they can go to sovereigntycoalition.org, correct?
Yes, sir.
And what will they get there beyond being able to sign the petition? They get a pretty good briefing on what these treaty-like agreements impose on American and the danger, right, that it poses to our sovereignty.
Yeah, they'll learn more about it than what we just described, because there is more to it. Just let me give you three other examples, John. One is every man, woman, and child in the world will get a digital ID if these guys have their way. What does that mean? That would mean not only all of your personal medical information is on that card and can be shared, would be shared with, among others, the Chinese Communist Party and the World Health Organization it runs, obviously, but also that your other information would assuredly wind up there too. You know, where you work, you know, what you eat, where your kids go to school, what your social media posts include. And this is a vehicle for finishing what Tedros Ghebreyesus called the China model that he recommended in the pandemic by essentially creating the infrastructure for the social credit system by which the Chinese communists tyrannically misrule their own people. Then there's another aspect, John, which I know will hit you where you live as a journalist. The kind of censorship mechanism that the Supreme Court considered the other day, that the Biden administration had been engineering with the tech giants, is actually mandated mandated by this these treaties. They would require every nation to create some sort of mechanism that sure nobody says anything, wrote anything, knew anything that was at odds with the WHO party line. That would not be good, obviously. And then finally, there's an unbelievable feature of this thing as part of this sort of socialist redistribution of wealth agenda. They want to make sure that everybody gets to share in the information about pandemic suitable pathogens that are turning up, usually in biological weapons programs, by the way. And what those would represent would be, wait for it, biological weapons. Creating a kind of clearinghouse to share that sort of information, as one of our medical participants in the Sovereignty Coalition, Dr. Merrill Ness, says, you know, that's a formula for proliferating biological warfare all over the world. And she said, you know, the only possible justification for that could be that you want to depopulate the planet. Well, that happens to be the agenda of the largest single donor to the World Health Organization. And that's, by the way, not our government. It's right up there. But even more than we put into it, Bill Gates puts money into it. And that is one of his personal priorities, is depopulation. It's outrageous.
There is a lot of concern. Obviously, people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. been out there. Lots of members of Congress, Ralph Norman, who's been on our show talking about this, Ron Johnson, others. There's a really strong coalition of political leaders that are now speaking up. What are the chances that this will get through in May, or what are the chances that it can be stopped?
Well, look, what we're trying to do isn't to stop it. We're trying to defer action on it, which by the rules of the WHO itself, their own regulations, you're supposed to give, you know, member nations 4 months notice of what it is they're being asked to approve. Well, that would have been back in January 27th. You know, that's not now. And it certainly isn't as they get even closer to that end of May date. So deferring is the sensible thing to do. It's also the necessary thing to do. And my personal feeling is that if we can simply get this can kicked down the road a bit, the public is going to find that they don't want any part of it. The Senate is going to find that it actually does need to man up and do its job and disapprove these things. So I think it can be stopped, but it does require, I think, a bit more time. In the meantime, we have to use what time is available to us. And that requires, I think, all hands on deck, John. And this is, again, why I'm so appreciative of your leadership on this. And I'm hoping the rest of our team at Real America's Voice will all get engaged on this, because at the end of the day, I'm certain of one thing. And by the way, you mentioned, I think, a poll that John McLaughlin did for us.
This is very important. The American public are with you on this subject and not with the globalists.
100%. And that's when they don't even really know a lot about the details. The more they know, the more certain they're not going to want it. And you know, the secret sauce here, John, just a clue, as they say in the intelligence business, is they call it global governance. What they're trying to do is create a mechanism whereby, you know, nation states and sovereignty and all that stuff is over the side in favor of elites running the world, and with Chinese characteristics in the case of the World Health Organization. We need to stop that. And I think the American people overwhelmingly prefer, in fact, our poll attests to this, they want our form of government making health decisions for us, not global governance, especially from people who've demonstrated such inadequacies in the past.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers are pretty interesting. A good idea, bad idea, bad idea, 54% to 29% who think it's a good idea. 75% of Americans believe these decisions about health a global health crisis should be made by elected U.S. officials, not international officials. That's a pretty important one. Almost 64% believe the U.S. Senate should approve this treaty rather than allow it to go through without Senate review. Just remarkable, strong trend lines. You don't see strong trend lines like this on most public policy issues. This was a McLaughlin & Associates poll from April 17th, if I remember correctly. So there is a window. Congress is clamoring. The American people are clear where they stand. if someone's listening today and they're like, hey, I want to help. I want to make sure we can delay this. What are the steps that, what can they do right now between now and mid-May to make a difference?
Well, I think it always starts with prayer. With God's help, all things are possible. Without it, it's a hard slog. Secondly, I think everybody who is a supporter of President Donald Trump needs to support his call for withdrawing from the World Health Organization. He said that when he was in office. He tried to do it. That was reversed when Biden took over. He says he'll do it again when he's back. We need his help right now, to be honest, elevating this issue, making sure everybody understands what's at stake and that it becomes a deciding issue. I think it really could be the defining issue of this campaign. If people understand it's a choice between globalism on the one hand and our constitutional republic on the other. We know where Donald Trump stands on that. We know where Joe Biden stands on that. It should be an issue that is presented clearly to the public. And I'll tell you, John, as a guy who, as a young man, served Ronald Reagan, I remember vividly when he sought a mandate for a similar kind of strategic course correction. That was with respect to the Soviet Union. He got that mandate overwhelmingly in 1980, and he proceeded to carry out the changes that were required. And the rest, as they say, is history. We need a similar kind of movement now. And I think President Trump is well suited to lead it. We need his help with that as well. And then finally, go to sovereigntycoalition.org, folks, and just do your part individually. And John, to your question, yes, you can sign the petition, but that will automatically take you to, with a click of a mouse or two, to an Align Act campaign that will send what you want the president to know and your elected representatives in the Senate and the House about not wanting to go down this very dark path of surrendering our sovereignty and really our constitutional republic in the process.
Yeah. This is important stuff. And grassroots are such a powerful vehicle for getting politicians' attentions. If you don't think presidents and members of Congress pay attention when their phone gets flooded, when their email box gets flooded, they do pay attention. This is a really, really important moment to send your sentiments on this. Frank, I want to start where we, finish where we started off. We were talking about Japan, and of course, we were talking about the Japanese protests against this WHO set of agreements. But earlier this month, there was another stark moment in Japan. Japan's Prime Minister, Fumio Kishida, made some very stark comments that it's Americans have to overcome their undercurrent of self-doubt about the role that Americans play in the world today. That is a really powerful statement from one of our allies. There's been such hesitancy, mixed signals, mixed messages, quite frankly, mixed performance by the Biden administration. Our allies are actually screaming at us right now, get back and lead again. Where's your leadership? How shocking was it to see Japan's prime minister make those comments, really trying to prod on our current president?
Well, I'd say, John, actually, it was a very welcome intervention by a respected leader of a friendly, indeed vitally important allied country. It was a call to action for all of us not, you know, fall for the temptations of endless wars and all of that, but to be the leader of the free world. If we don't, we will lose it. And, you know, I'm watching what's playing out in Israel right now, what Biden is doing there. It's betraying that particular ally, and it is a message to both every other one of our allies, such as we have them left, and the enemies of our country, that America is not up to the game. We desperately need to change that perception, or we will find ourselves. Well, it may not be an endless war, but it may be one we lose right quick.
It's pretty remarkable to see. And I hear this from allies and world leaders all the time in private and in sometimes public conversations. America doesn't feel like it's leading right now. And it speaks in mumbled sentences, and the American interest, the American value for whatever the current crisis in the world is so unclear. It's made both made our allies less confident in us and our clearly our enemies more emboldened. Frank, for all the folks that listen and watch the good work you do every day, what's the best way for them to stay in touch with everything that you're doing, all your great analysis, all of the great work that you do at the center and other places?
Well, thank you, John. It's a wealth of opportunities, I guess, really. We do at the mothership, the Center for Security Policy, fabulous research and great partnering like this Sovereignty Coalition. You can find all that at centerforsecuritypolicy.org. I'm proud of the work we do at the Committee on the Present Danger, another of our partnerships. That's presentdangerchina.org. And then I guess one-stop shopping for our television show on Real America's Voice and the radio version and some commentaries I do is securingamerica.tv.
Pretty easy to find that, and a great show. Definitely worth watching, folks. Frank, thanks for keeping us up to speed on this. We're going to get you back before the May deadline to get us an update, but really appreciate you sounding the alarm, and also not only sounding the alarm, but creating a vehicle by which Americans can get engaged and make a difference on this very, very important issue.
God bless you, John.
You as well. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. A big thank you to Ambassador Rick Grinnell, to Frank Gaffney, former Reagan Defense Department official. Two very important world issues that you're not hearing a lot about in the other media. You're hearing about it here at Just the News and the John Solomon Reports because we pride ourselves on covering the news that others ignore that's important to you and the world and the America that we live in. Hey, if you're in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia, on Wednesday, just 2 days from now, be sure to come over and check out my participation in my good friends, AMAC, Association of Mature American Citizens, Boot Camp for Boomers. We're going to do a training session so that everyday Americans can learn how to get engaged and be involved in their elections, ensuring that it's easy to vote, hard to cheat, to encourage elected leaders to solve the border crisis, solve the spending crisis, solve all the crises that we have in this country right now. If you want to come see me and watch me MC the event, do some Q&A with me, be sure to show up on Wednesday. All the details are at amac.us. Also, if you want to take advantage of that great Field of Greens offer, 15% off plus free rush shipping on the supplement I use to keep me healthy. I get 5 doses of vegetable and fruit a day with a single scoop of powder. Go to fieldofgreens.com. Use the promo code JUSTNEWS. All right, that wraps it up. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you and have a great night.